On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. You might have thought the debate over commercial whaling was over and that the battle to save the whales was won. Well, think again. At its annual meeting in the Caribbean this week, the International Whaling Commission shook up the politics of whaling and shocked those who have fought for years to end the hunt. Despite a global moratorium on most whaling, the international body approved a resolution endorsing the resurrection of commercial whaling. With many species of whales now thriving, a few pro-whaling nations argue in favor of sustainable use. Environmentalists say that means the wholesale butchering of the world's largest and gentlest mammals. But pro-whaling forces ask, if we accept the killing of deer, moose, cows, and pigs, why not whales? Up next on Point, the fight to save the whales. Again. And joining me now is Philip Armour. He's a writer for Outside Magazine. He wrote a piece in last month's issue entitled Bloody Business about his own experience on a Norwegian whaling vessel. He also recently attended the annual International Whaling Commission, which met in St. Kitts and Nevis, which wrapped up earlier this week. And Philip Armour, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Anthony.
One thing that I wanted to get from you, and I read your piece in Outside Magazine, is the experience you had aboard a Norwegian whaling ship. Tell me about that. Why did you go aboard? What did you want to find out, and what did you see?
Sure. I was on a ship in April of last year, 2005, and I wanted to go because there was news to report, I felt. An editor at Outside Magazine, Alex Hurd, had got the idea to approach the Norwegians several years ago, and we tried to get Alex on a ship originally, and then I ended up in Sweden editing a Swedish-language version of Outside Magazine. Because I'm half Swedish and speak the language, I was able to gain their trust and to convince them that we were not going to write a salacious piece, that we were interested in the whalers' lives, in their perspective. We felt like there was a story there, and so I went and lived with them for 2 weeks on this cramped little ship in stormy seas, and observed them at work, and a very sobering experience.
And tell me why. Give us some detail. Explain the way whales are harvested today in this modern era.
Right. Well, it happens in two different ways. Japan hunts in the Southern Ocean around Antarctica in very stormy seas from large ships. The Norwegians and the Icelanders use much smaller boats, and they hunt when it's calm out. The Norwegians and the Icelanders look for dorsal fins in the water. They go out in calm seas and look for dorsal fins, and when they see one, they pursue it with stealth and wait for it to surface close to the boat, and then fire a cannon with a harpoon and a grenade attached to the front, which explodes inside the whale, many times killing it, but many times not. They winch it into the boat, and if it's still alive, they shoot it with a rifle. The Japanese, because the Southern Ocean is so much stormier, they hunt in boats that are over 100 feet long, whereas the Norwegians and Icelanders hunt in about 50-foot boats. They go out in stormy seas, and they herd the whales to a point of exhaustion. They don't follow them quietly. They pursue them actively until the whale is surfacing with regularity because it's out of breath, and then they shoot it. And if the whale isn't dead, they pull it up by the tail at the front of the boat and drown it. And so it's two different techniques.
I see.
I'd say the Scandinavian model is more humane and They're both pretty gruesome, but...
Yeah, I wanted to... You write in the article that this was a painful process to watch, and I just want to read just a little excerpt from you make reference to a gentleman named Skarheim, who I guess is the harpooner, and you say...
He's the captain.
He's the captain. You say, over the next 16 hours, we'll kill 4 more whales. Skarheim never misses, and the stakes pile up, covering every inch of walking space on the deck. The only unknown in the process is how quickly the whales perish. Earlier in the trip, Skarheim had assured me that the exploding grenade knocks the whales unconscious and they die almost immediately from the shock of blood loss. That was true with the first whale, but the next 4 suffer a great deal. The harpoons hit muscle and appear to drive the whales mad with pain and fear. One of them shoots out of the water and writhes like a marlin on a hook. Joining me now in the studio is Patrick Ramage. He's Director of Public Affairs for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. He also just returned from the IWC meeting, his 8th one that he attended. Welcome to you, Patrick.
Anthony, it's good to be with you.
Let me get your the same question that I started off the hour with. I'm trying to understand what happened at the IWC and how you saw it. There was this non-binding vote that seemed to shift that body toward this idea that commercial whaling is something that we could return to, should return to.
Well, the global conservation community and the whales themselves did a lot better at the St. Kitts meeting than many expected. On the 4 substantive votes that actually had an impact on IWC policy, Japan and its allies were defeated, and the conservation majority was maintained. As Philip outlined, on the one non-binding resolution offered by the government of St. Kitts, and therefore that made it more difficult for some nations to vote against the host government, they did receive a very narrow one-vote majority in support of a resolution. It was really poorly crafted, has only the force of rhetoric, but calls on the IWC to consider the resumption of commercial whaling, the lifting of the moratorium, had some critical things to say about groups like ours, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and some specious scientific arguments about whales eating all the fish. So overall, Japan and its allies came into the meeting thinking they would run the table, limped out with a non-binding declaration. We were pleased, but there are troubled waters ahead for this forum and certainly for the whales, which, as you've outlined, continue to be killed, either disguised as scientific research or in open defiance of the will and the spirit of the international community by Norway.
Mm. Let me ask you about that. You say whales continue to be killed disguised as scientific research. What are you referring to specifically?
Well, as Philip outlined, the IWC began in 1946 as a whalers club, but it had a twofold mandate. The orderly regulation of the whaling industry was one of those mandates. But what led the United States and other nations to take a lead in setting up the International Whaling Commission 60 years ago were the conservation threats to the great whales, which, if anything, today are more numerous and diverse than they were at that time. When establishing the IWC, the member nations determined that if a nation wanted to pursue scientific research, that they would be within their right to grant themselves a special permit quota, it's called, under Article 8E.
And this is what Japan does, essentially, correct?
They do. They did not take an objection to the commercial whaling moratorium in 1986. They objected to that for a couple of years, then withdrew under international pressure that objection, and then presto, resumed their whaling activities on the high seas on certainly a commercial scale, with the product still going to fish markets in Tokyo, though they're having an increasingly difficult time getting rid of that whale meat. And now they call it science. It's not science. It's 101 things to do with a dead whale, and it's commercial whaling in disguise.
Hmm. Well, Philip Armour, I mean, what you saw there in Norway wasn't scientific whaling. This was whaling to harvest the meat, and there's a tradition for that in Norway, and it's very popular, correct?
That's right. They allow themselves to hunt under different evasive tactics within the IWC mandate. They're a member nation. They were one of the original 16 nations to found the IWC. When the moratorium came around in 1986, they refused to participate and continued to whale, and so essentially never stopped. So they are not they don't hold themselves to the moratorium, although they are a member of the IWC still. So, and they continued to whale. That's right.
In Norway's case, as Philip outlines, they did exercise their right. They took an objection to this commercial whaling moratorium, At least you could say they had the courage of their convictions, and they're calling it what it is, commercial whaling. Mm-hmm. That said, it's well beyond the limits that the IWC has established. Should any commercial whaling ever be allowed to resume, the formulae, the scientific formulae that would establish what numbers could be taken, Norway's well north of that limit, and is voting for Japan right down the line on every resolution offered. So while there is a technical difference in the justification for their whaling, they're a bad actor in the IWC, right along with Japan and the other nations that Japan has relentlessly recruited. Philip noted this, the Caribbean nations. It's unfair to say, as Philip suggested, that the Caribbean region is in support of whaling. That's not true. There are six countries, a critical voting bloc at the IWC, that have really been held hostage by Japan, which ties its fisheries aid and other forms of development assistance to developing countries, recruits them into the IWC in what Japan openly refers to as a vote consolidation strategy, and they are bringing this forum to heel. Japan cares more.
Okay, I don't want to get too. I mean, I know that this the sort of political intricacies of the IWC is extremely important, but I want to try to focus this discussion on this debate and this idea of sustainable harvesting versus an outright moratorium. And to, just to sort of get us going in that direction, I want to introduce a guest from Norway. It's Rune Fruvik. He's joining us from Rena, Norway. He's secretary of the High North Alliance, a Norwegian-based pro-whaling organization. Its members include Norway, Iceland, Greenland, and Canada. And Mr. Fruvik, welcome.
Thank you, Anthony.
I was asking the journalist Philip Armour about his experience in Norway. Tell me about Norway's whaling industry. What kind of whale you hunt, how many whales, and why it's important to keep this going.
Well, in Norway, only the minke whale.
The minke whale.
That's the smallest of the baleen whale species, about 6-7 meters, and there's about 1,500 kilos of meat per minke whale. And it's hunted by ordinary fishermen. They go fishing the rest of the year, and in the spring they change gear, and then they go hunting minke whale. So right now the minke whale season is on. The hunt is a bit slower this year than before, but they have hunted about 250 minke whale so far.
Now it's important to point out that I think earlier when we talk about a debate about whaling, we're talking about whales that are endangered and disappearing. Is the minke whale, are there a lot of them? Are you running out of minke whales? Is it a sustainable resource is what I'm asking?
Well, the scientific committee of the International Whaling Commission, which is comprised of more than 100 scientists worldwide, they consider this to be an abandoned stock, and it numbers more than 100,000 animals. And such a big population can sustain a harvest of 1,000 animals per year without any problems.
I see. And is it Norway's desire to see this global moratorium lifted? I mean, you hunt in spite of the global moratorium, but does it make sense for the global moratorium to be rolled back?
Well, such is international law. The Norwegian whale hunt is in perfect accordance with international law and also the laws of the International Whaling Commission. They decided back in 1992 to adopt a moratorium without any scientific basis at all. Norway could not accept that and said that we need to continue to base our decisions on scientific information. And when the Whaling Commission refuses to listen to the scientific advice that they are obliged to do as member to this convention, then they cannot be taken seriously any longer. And that's the sad part of it, because this whaling commission is the regime, the forum that's supposed to decide the sizes of the various whale quotas. But when they are not doing its job, we need to do it by ourselves. But we're using the quota calculation model, etc., developed by the scientific committee of this whaling commission.
Mr. Fruvik, stand by. I want to get Patrick Ramage to respond to this. We're hearing from Norway that they're using science. They're saying the IWC isn't using science. They say they're hunting whales that are in abundant supplies, a sustainable stock. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, Mr. Fruvik, And the whaling governments that he represents tend to take an a la carte approach to international law and to the decisions of the International Whaling Commission, which is on record as having shredded abundance estimates offered by Japan and Norway. There are clear incentives for the whalers to inflate the population estimates. These creatures are notoriously difficult to count, but all 13 great whale species are on Appendix 1 of something called CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. So when Mr. Fruvik says that Norway's fully in compliance, what he actually means is that they have threaded the needle by objecting and using their right under international law to take reservations and ignore the decisions of the international community.
But what about his point, hunting whales that are in abundant supply, using stocks of whales as a sustainable resource? I mean, your view and the point of view of the International Fund for Animal Welfare is any whaling should be off the table. Correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. The historical record is not very encouraging, and as Philip outlined at the top of our time together, the IWC proved itself over a 40-year period uniquely unable to police a very difficult industry to monitor on the high seas, and harnessing with 21st century technology an industrial scale whale hunt to natural populations that are slow to reproduce, are highly migratory creatures that have a special status under international law. It's precisely the wrong answer, not just for whales, but for people too. The products of whaling, first, it's for products that nobody need. In contrast to the heyday of Yankee whaling, which in the New England region sent boats all over the world, whales whale oil lit the lamps of the Western world from 1870 on through the early parts of the last century. Today's whaling is conducted for products that nobody needs. There's no reason for these animals to be killed. The whale meat, even the Japanese government has now put out health warnings through their Ministry of Health, saying that pregnant women, children, the elderly, and other vulnerable populations shouldn't eat whale and dolphin meat because of concentrations of PCBs, heavy metals, toxics. It's a bad idea for animals and people in the 21st century. Whales, in the 1940s, the main threat that they faced was human hunting. Today, entanglements in fishing nets, destruction of their habitat through marine pollution, ship strikes, the changes wrought by global climate change. A whole range of threats exist that didn't exist in the last century. It's the last time we should be returning to the bad old days of whaling.
1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK is the number to call. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Chautauqua, New York. Hello, Roger.
Hello.
What's on your mind? And I should say, this is you've called in, and we're very grateful that you did. This is Roger Payne. He's the president of Ocean Alliance. Roger, you've been listening to this discussion so far. I'd love to get your take.
Yes, I think one of the most important points that is, and it was just made by Patrick and Maj, is the way that the Norway has gone back to mink, or continued, I should say, minke whaling. Rune Fruvik referred to the moratorium. It's, of course, not a moratorium. It's a zero quota, and there was a very important distinction between those two things. But the thing I think the world would really have to be, basically a total dreamers to think that if whaling continues, that it will in fact be under the sort of control that would be needed to keep it sustainable. Once somebody wants to find madness as continuing doing the same things again and again and expecting a different result. My institute, Ocean Alliance, has just returned from around the world trip in which we were measuring pollutants in sperm whales. And our results are still preliminary, by which I mean our samples are small, but they are completely internally consistent with themselves. We're continuing to do the analyses, and we'll finish it, I hope, in the next few months. But what our analyses are showing is that beyond my wildest dreams and worries, by which I mean beyond anything I ever thought would have been the case, we are finding pollutant levels, particularly in heavy metals in whales, that are just off the charts. Now, that means that when Norway attempts to sell whale meat to Japan, as she has been doing and has been turned down by Japan because of the pollutant levels in her whale meat, that this, once people start measuring for the sort of metal levels that we're finding, that the game will be over. Nobody's going to be wanting to eat meat with that sort of concentration in it. We took 5.5 years to do this trip. We collected samples from 960 sperm whales worldwide.
But this isn't the, I mean, this is very important and significant what you're telling me, Roger Payne, but this isn't the main reason why you're in favor, why you're opposed to whale hunting, is it? I mean, you're interested in protection of the species.
Yeah, but my personal feelings are just my personal feelings, whereas the work which we do applies across the board. And my feeling is that's important. I mean, everybody has their own opinion about all kinds of things, including whales. But the question is this stuff safe to eat? I think you can make a pretty strong statement, pretty strong argument to say that the biggest public health threat humanity has ever faced in its history is, in fact, the loss of access to fish and whales in the sea because of the increased pollutant concentrations in them. That sounds very irresponsible. Hmm.
Well, let me get a response from our friend from Norway, Mr. Fruvik. Is this stuff safe to eat? Roger Payne poses that question. What's your response to that?
Well, I think we should stay focused now. He's talking about some analysis of sperm whales, and I think the reaction to finding levels of pollutants in whales and also in other animals shouldn't be that we should stop to eat them. The issue should be we should stop to pollute the oceans. We need also to eat food in the future, and that food must be produced in some way, or whether we like it or not. For those that eat fish or meat, that food comes from a living animal that we have to, well, unfortunately, kill. That's the way it works. Mm. And our view is that eating whale meat, whaling is a very environmentally friendly way of producing food. It's much more environmentally friendly than the factory farm, and also it's better with respect to the animal welfare issues. On the factory farm, the animals, they suffer from the day they're born, and they live a miserable life until their death. The whales, they live a pretty good life in the ocean, and then suddenly that they are shot. It's like the light is switched off. Some of them suffer a little bit towards the end of their life, and we're working towards reducing that amount of suffering. But that's also the case with slaughterhouses. They are far from perfect.
I want to come back to you, Patrick Ramage, in the studio. We heard just before the break from Runa Frovic talking about this being a pretty humane way to harvest food relative to the other ways we harvest food, whether it's a commercial slaughterhouse and so on and so forth. What's the International Fund for Animal Welfare's response to that kind of argument?
Well, we're opposed to whaling not just on conservation grounds, but because it's unspeakably cruel. And as Philip's beautiful prose conveyed, this is a horrible business out on the open sea. Film footage taken by Greenpeace and other organizations over the years documents that. And to compare it to factory farming, and I'm certainly not here in defense of some of the horrible practices involved in factory farming.
Well, I was just going to say, if you went to a commercial beef slaughterhouse out in Kansas, for example, it's not a pretty sight, and I don't think anyone would be able to say these cattle are treated well.
No, but compared to harpooning whales in the open ocean, some of which on video documentation that our scientists have looked at, and we prepared a report submitted by the Australian government at this meeting. Some of these whales take 30 minutes and longer to die. They're asphyxiated in water and their own blood as they're winched up to the side of the boat. It's an awful, awful business. And while it's obvious that Mr. Fruvik and the apologists for whaling would like to talk about just about anything else than what happens to whales on the open water, This whaling that was filmed was on minke whales, larger species. It's even more horrific, has no place in the 21st century. And again, it's for products that nobody needs.
Hmm. Philip Armour, I want to bring you into this discussion because in your piece in Outside Magazine, you didn't pull any punches. You described the brutality that is used to harvest these animals. But you yourself say you see sort of some middle ground here, a room for some commercial harvesting of whales on a sustainable basis.
Well, I'd like to think that I'm taking the middle path, which I'm interpreting as objective science. I've interviewed scientists from Scripps in San Diego. The
Oceanographic Institute, right?
Thank you. And they didn't pull any punches either, saying that, despite personal reservations, limited hunting of stocks that are large enough to handle it is okay. It's not going to cause extinction. It's not going to cause ecological collapse. That it should be viewed as a form of resource management, just like cod fishing. And to that extent, I just wanted to ask Patrick Ramaj if he disputes the numbers, the number estimates for minke whales in the North Atlantic, because I've seen both pro and anti-whalers agree on about 100,000 whales. Is that something that the IFAW agrees on?
I'm not a scientist, and for us, it's not a numbers game. And it's not so much justifying a whale hunt by pointing to numbers of whales that may in fact be returning from the brink of extinction in some cases in some very specific regions.
But not the minke whale. I mean, that was never hunted in whaling's heyday.
Yeah, and the reason it wasn't hunted, Philip, is because it was deemed too small to be commercially viable. So the whalers worked their way from blue whale on down right through the other 12 species. And now the minke, the little guy, suddenly is commercially viable, deemed important, and they're prepared to do to that population what they did to all the others.
I really don't, Patrick. I mean, it's a different type of industry. When they hunted the large species, it was for oil, a commercial, you know, commodity, a cash crop, and there was a huge incentive to make a lot of money from that. The minke is hunted for meat. They eat it. They hunt it much less. There's no incentive for that type of ignorance to wreak havoc on the minke. I think culturally, you know, the Norwegians have evolved. I think it's different to talk about the Japanese who proposed to hunt the fin whale, which is, in fact, an endangered species. To me, that is indefensible. I mean, but the minke is different because it's so plentiful.
Right. You say
it's two different things.
Sure. You say the Norwegians have evolved, the industry has evolved, the rest of the world has evolved. And whatever your personal reservations might be about the fin whale proposals by Japan, Norway is content to vote right down the line for a full-scale resumption of industrial whaling by Japan and other countries. In truth, the real numbers game that people should be paying attention to now is that the sustainable use of whales in the 21st century is whale watching, an industry that is taking off worldwide. 90 countries and territories now have responsible whale watching operations, contributing more than $1 billion in primary and secondary economic revenues to coastal communities worldwide. Animals and people both do better when whales are seen and not hurt.
Why can't you whale watch and hunt?
Hold that question, Philip Armour, because I want to bring our guests from Norway into this. Mr. Fruvik, respond to that idea. I guess what I'm asking you to sort of describe is Norway's cultural attachment to whale hunting. I mean, why is it difficult for you to just accept Patrick Ramage's idea, hey, why don't you stop hunting the whales and let's just set up a bunch of whale watching boats instead and everybody will be happy?
Well, basically because he's wrong. And Patrick Ramage, he is free to come here and to establish a company, a whale-watching company, and I wish him good luck. This type of minke whale hunt has been going on for about 70 years in Norway before when the engine came to Norway. And the reason why they're hunting the minke whale is that these boats are so small, they can't cope with big whales. And the record says that, okay, during the past 60, 70 years, there's an annual take of about 2,000 minke whales per year, and we think that in itself demonstrates that it should be possible to continue hunting the minke whales, and also when the scientists agree. And this argument that it's not necessary to eat whale meat, yes, that's true, but you could say the same about beef, about chicken or vegetables or whatever, but we need food, and we like to continue eating whale meat. We like it. It's good food, it's lean and tasty, and it's healthy, and why shouldn't we? Doesn't make sense. And an animal rights organization, which Patrick Ramage is basically representing, I respect their view that they don't think any animals should be used for human consumption. That's fair, but most people in today's world, they are not animal rights people. They eat both fish and meat.
I want to get to a caller, 1-800-423-8255. Before I do, Patrick Ramage, I know you're dying to respond to Mr. Fruvik quickly, if you would.
Yeah, as our name would suggest, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, we're not an animal rights organization. We do tend to see the whaling issue as a matter of right and wrong. He says the majority of people worldwide eat fish and meat. I'm one of those majority. But it's very plain to me, and many that have looked at this issue, whether from a political, scientific, economic perspective, that whaling has no place in the 21st century.
Let's go to Arthur. Let's go to Arthur, who's calling from Walcott, Connecticut. Hi, Arthur.
Hello. There's been some research lately stating that porpoises, for example, can create names for each other, and they respond to these names and know who's being called. And I was wondering if perhaps whales may have a similar sort of intelligence, perhaps even more than what we currently understand, perhaps even a culture. And would whaling and things such as that be harming a culture that we haven't really even discovered yet?
I'm not sure if we have the scientists on board for this show who can really answer that question accurately. But let me, if you don't mind, Arthur, sort of redirect the question. I mean, I think it comes from a good place. And let me start with you, Philip. It does seem that the passion behind this debate comes from this special place that whales occupy in our imagination, whether it's because they're the largest mammal in the ocean. There is this sort of passion about, you know, yes, we can hunt beef cattle. We can slaughter beef cattle. We can hunt deer, but certainly not whales. You've written about this. Where does this special place in our collective imaginations come from about whales?
Well, I think it's a cultural perspective. I mean, if you grew up in a culture that doesn't have whaling, it's not in your worldview. The blue whale is the largest animal to ever have lived on planet Earth. And the fact that it's been hunted to near extinction is, you know, offensive to just about anyone. I think even to whalers, this generation of whalers, the last generation, probably not. I don't think they even realized what they were doing. There was a different level of ignorance then. The science wasn't as advanced. And whale intelligence does appeal to people. I mean, they sing. They're mammals. They do stir the imagination. And I think, but I think to take that personal opinion, which the first caller, he made that distinction that a personal opinion should not be confused with intelligent resource management. And that's why I was sort of needling Patrick a little bit, just because I feel like just because one has that opinion does not mean one cannot intelligently manage that resource. I mean, and especially if it's not even your country or your culture, it seems like a slightly indulgent perspective to force other cultures to accommodate a cultural perspective that they just don't have, especially if taken objectively, you know, with hard, cold science that the species can handle it. So it's
okay.
It's two different things, I feel.
Do you want to respond to that, Patrick?
Sure. Just that science, that cold, hard science that Philip refers to, is woefully lacking. And you know, time marches on. Here in New England, where I live, we're proud of our whaling history. Heroic people set off in little wooden boats, went around the world for products that at that time were vital to our society and economy, and outstripped, even with that technology over the last two centuries, outstripped the capacity of these magnificent creatures to maintain their populations. To contemplate an industrial-scale hunt at this time, Philip mentions that humpback whales, the humpback is the one species of whale that sings very individualized songs. And our earlier caller, Dr. Roger Payne, did some amazing work in the 1970s and 80s documenting that fact. These are the very whales that Japan has announced already at the IWC. In 2007, they're going to go after 50 humpback whales, mm-hmm. the basis of the whale-watching industry across New England and in other parts of the world. They do it with the full support of Mr. Fruvik and his organization, governments of Norway, Iceland, Greenland, and Canada.
Let me ask Mr. Fruvik about that. Why would you support that, Mr. Fruvik? Is there another side to that, to what Patrick Ramage is talking about?
To support what?
To support the hunting, the Japanese hunting of humpback whales.
Well, they're proposing to take only a few, and somewhere you need to start, and perhaps they will find out there aren't that many of them. But if it was a lot they were taking, then it would be different. But Patrick Ramage and his fellows, it's time to be a little bit more tolerant towards other people. I'd like them to be more open-minded and liberal and not trying to enforce their views on all other people. I think, personally, eating horse meat or dog meat is abhorrent, but I don't think it's fair that I should impose that view on other people.
Let's take a phone call.
I think we need to respect the differences.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call. AJ is calling from Potsdam, New York. Hi, AJ.
Good day. I just wanted to weigh in on the assertion of cultural traditions, you know, that cuts both ways, or several different ways. Tradition has been used to justify slavery, in some cultures, even human sacrifice. So I think that is a specious argument. Thank you.
Has AJ left us? Let me throw that argument out to you, Mr. Fruvik. There was AJ calling from Potsdam, New York, talking about tradition. You were asking for respect a moment ago. AJ suggesting that this kind of tradition, is an aberration in a sense. What's your response to that? And I guess I'm getting to the broader question. What's your response in general to this passion that you hear from this side of the ocean and this part of the world about concern about whaling?
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to be concerned, and then people should try to inform themselves, to educate them on this issue. Okay, fine, the blue whale is the biggest animal that's ever lived on the earth, but it's not being hunted. We're talking about much, much smaller species. And fine, perhaps some dolphins can communicate. They have perhaps a higher intelligence. But the minke whale apparently has the same intelligence level as a cow. And it can't be really intelligent when it approaches Norwegian whaling boats. And if they were able to communicate, they would have told their friends and fellows. But they're not. So they do not have these human capacities that we attach to them. This is a imagination that we have up in our head, and it doesn't correspond with the truth. And I find it important to compare whaling with slavery. That's not just fair. We think there are very good moral and ethical reasons to continue whaling on a sustainable level. And the task before us is to make sure that this is done in a sustainable way and that the hunting methods are as good as possible. And I'd like to sit down with Patrick Ramage and other animal welfare groups. Okay, let's sit down and develop these methods to improve them, because whaling will continue. They're talking like they think that they're still able to stop whaling, but they're not.
Well, whaling, there's the kernel. There's the kernel of the debate, Patrick Ramage. We're almost out of time. I just want to give you literally 10 seconds to wrap this up.
Whaling in the 21st century is unlawful, unhealthy, unnecessary, and unwise. These are magnificent creatures. They swim through our subconscious. There is something special about them. We can protect them in the 21st century.
Thank you so much to all three of you for joining us. Philip Armour, writer for Outside Magazine, thank you, and thank you for your work in Outside Magazine.
Thanks, Anthony.
Patrick Ramage, Director of Public Affairs at the International Fund for Animal Welfare, thank you for joining us today. And Mr. Rune Fruvik from Norway, Secretary of the High North Alliance, thank you for joining us and for your time.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at onpointradio.org. Our senior producer today is Graham Griffith. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. Have a great weekend. This is On Point.